Today on the 21st, we're spending the morning at Research Park in Champaign-Urbana. We're talking tech, startup, and what it takes to attract talent to this college town. Here's Research Park Director Laura Frericks.
If we don't have the people to fill the jobs in the tech sector, it won't thrive. And that really is the critical piece of it, is the people. And in order for young professionals to be here, that requires arts, culture, lifestyle, amenities to meet their needs.
Thanks to the Champaign County EDC for that audio. We'll also talk to companies that started in Central Illinois, including one business that makes robots to help farmers measure their crops.
What we want the human to do is be at the edge of the field, send the robot in, so that the person can go back in a nice air-conditioned room and analyze that data and understand what's going on.
That's all coming up this very special 21st, live from Enterprise Works at Research Park on the U of I campus. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Over this past year, we've tried to get out of our studios and into the places where you live and work. We've been to Springfield and Bloomington Normal so far. And this week, we're taking the show on the road once again, but we're a little bit closer to our home station of WILL in Urbana. Over the next 3 days, we're going to be out and about all across Champaign-Urbana. We'll be at the Champaign Farmers Market later today at 5 o'clock. On Thursday, we'll be back in Urbana at the Pygmalion Festival at the Craner Center for the Performing Arts. If you're in either town, we'd love to see you at any of those shows. Please come on out. Today, we're inching all the way to the other side of the U of I campus. We're live from Enterprise Works at the University of Illinois Research Park. It's a home for tech startups and businesses, and today, we wanted to focus on the startup community in Champaign-Urbana and what it looks like to develop businesses and companies outside of Chicago. Later in the hour, we're going to be speaking with student entrepreneurs, founders of new companies here at Research Park, and from people who are trying to push the envelope on cycling and public transit across Champaign-Urbana. But first, I wanted to start by welcoming Laura Frericks. She's the director of Research Park, and she's here with me now. Hi, Laura. Welcome to the 21st, and thanks for having us here, for hosting us today.
Hi, Nyla. It's great to have the 21st live from Enterprise Works, our incubator of the University of Illinois. We're a proud home to many startups that have been founded from faculty and students, and it's a really dynamic place to see science making its effort towards commercialization and a lot of success that we've been able to attract outside investment and see these companies grow right here in Champaign-Urbana.
So this is my first time at Research Park. For our folks who are tuning in all across the state, can you tell us a little bit more about the type of companies that are all across Research Park, not just at Enterprise Works?
Sure. So the Research Park is really a tech community that's been built over the last 17 years. It now includes 120 tech companies. That includes large corporate innovation centers, big household names that people might know like State Farm and Caterpillar, West Coast companies like Yahoo and NVIDIA that have research facilities here that are really here after talent. And that's both the highly esteemed engineers in our community and the interdisciplinary mix of students that are feeding great groundbreaking innovations within these companies. And of course, the startups that we'll talk about today. So this is a hotbed of startup activity. There's so much science happening at the university, an ample opportunity to bring that to the market through the ingenuity of students, faculty, alumni that see an opportunity for new products and new technologies that can truly be disruptive.
Laura, how many people are employed here and at the companies across Research Park?
We have 2,100 employees here at the Research Park. That in aggregate makes us the third largest employer here in Champaign County. So we're really proud of the booming tech economy that's here. It's one of the reasons that we believe Champaign is the fastest growing city in the state of Illinois. That's really been driven a lot by technology and healthcare jobs. And it's an opportunity for us to talk about how startups are really vibrant, as well as the tech sector being a growth potential for the whole Illinois economy, driven here in Champaign by the companies that I had indicated, and also the student involvement. So we have more than 800 students that work here at a given time. It's a really amazing opportunity for our students to have experiential learning and work while they're in school, help pay for their education, and get these great experiences.
And what other role do you see Research Park playing on the U of I campus? You mentioned students. This is a role for students. This is also a place for faculty to develop ideas as well.
So increasingly, our faculty are entrepreneurs themselves. They come to the university, and they want the opportunity to not only pursue their research and teach students, but simultaneously do a startup as well. So having a place that's really supportive of that and enables that, as well as for our students who want to be entrepreneurs and start their own company, whether those are grad students, whether it's a postdoc researcher, or if it's an undergrad, we need to have really supportive amenities to help them. That's mentors and courses and early seed funding and physical places like this where they can collide with lots of entrepreneurs.
My guest is Laura Frericks. We're talking to her about Research Park at the U of I. And Laura, I wonder how you describe the Champaign-Urbana area, how you sell that to people who aren't from here. You mentioned big companies like Yahoo who maybe are coming from the West Coast. I wonder what their perceptions are of the area and what you're telling them are the benefits for having companies here.
Well, the University of Illinois has an outstanding reputation in technology. Computing has such a long legacy on this campus that for many, this is not a well-kept secret that there's an abundance of talent, but it hasn't been saturated in the ways that our peer markets that also have stellar engineering and technology programs like MIT and Stanford have already been surrounded by companies. So the relative untapped nature of this community is a great alternative to other places that are being looked at like Austin or Boulder. And what I think is really emerging are these knowledge cities, these pocket cities that have an abundance of PhDs, scientific talent, and technology that they can recruit and build new products around. So having, you know, more than 11,000 engineering students on this campus makes us one of the largest engineering schools, but it's also one of the most elite. And that combination of being top five, top six, and bigger than the other four that are in front of us in totality is a real winning point for industry that's really competitive for tech talent. But in addition to engineers, we can put together interdisciplinary teams here in a way that's really nimble. And that includes students in the arts, in the humanities, that are complementing and rounding out the new solutions that we need to make really innovative new companies. And I think our university is doing it really best in class in the country.
And I wonder how hard it is, if it becomes harder to sell when you hear statements like our current governor, Bruce Rauner, made earlier this summer, that there's not much of a workforce here in Champaign-Urbana. He also said it's hard to keep anything but small companies here. I know he apologized later for those remarks, but I wonder if that makes it more difficult.
It was certainly good to have him come back after he made those remarks and show off the companies that are growing here and that have been built with hundreds of employees here in our community.
So you don't feel there's any truth to those statements?
I know there is not a lot of truth in many of those statements that were made because we see it at places like Wolfram, we see it at places like Volition, and we see it at startup companies that are built here at the Research Park, whether that's Agrable or places like Granular, where they had a second site in addition to San Francisco that was built equally as fast and attracting talent that's really making them at the forefront of the market. So we were happy to have the opportunity to give a walking tour and get up close and personal with the companies to show off their workforce as one of the main reasons why they've chosen to come to Champaign-Urbana and have an excellent workforce that fuels their future.
I wonder what you think the challenges are when we're talking specifically about startup culture. I've heard from lots of companies, even in Chicago, that it's really hard to be not on a coast and not on the West Coast because that's where the center of venture capital funding is, and it's a little harder to get VC or seed funding when you're in the Midwest. What do you think the challenges are to then even being outside of our biggest city like Chicago?
Well, I'm going to be boastful in Champaign-Urbana and say this incubator, Enterprise Works, has had its startups, which are not as numerous as some of the other larger cities in terms of sheer volume. But of our startups that have been here since Enterprise Works opened, they have raised more than $1 billion in venture capital. That is by far more than any Chicago incubator. So they can be a bigger city, but we're winning on venture capital. And that's really a validation of the science and technology and the inventors and founders that have made attractive companies that industry wants to get behind. I think it's different when you have scientific technologies that are hard to replicate anywhere else, and that investors are really attracted to disruptive technologies that are really unique, and they'll come and they'll invest in those. We're increasingly keeping those companies as well in our own community and in Illinois. We can do more, but I think that we've been able to outbunch our weight class in many ways, and that's why we've got companies that continue to build and start their new ventures here, and more than 60% remain in Champaign County after leaving the incubator.
That's Laura Frerichs, the director of Research Park. Let's talk to some of those companies. Laura, if you can stick around for just a minute, but I wanted to introduce one of the companies here. Chinmay Soman is with us. He's the co-founder and CEO of EarthSense. It's one of the businesses that started right here in Champaign-Urbana, and I think it's a company that in many ways fits where we are in Illinois, and that's a marriage of agriculture and robotics. Hi, thank you for being here with us, Chinmay. I appreciate it.
Hey, Nyla. Thank you very much for having us on the show.
So that's basically great. I saw a headline that said if you crossed a Roomba with a John Deere, you would get a four-wheeled robot, and that's your Terra Essentia. Is that a pretty good description?
That's a good start, yeah. But, you know, people have to get a handle somewhere on what this new technology is that we're developing. But, yeah, we've gone out and talked to, you know, what's uniquely possible here is you can go out and talk to a few hundred farmers within 10 miles of the campus. And that really brings new insights, not to just create useful technologies, but also ask new fundamental questions. So, yeah, so we ended up creating a completely different kind of agricultural robot from the ground up, create an ultra-compact, lightweight instrument, and then, yeah, for people to get an idea of what that is. It's a good start to say it's a Roomba for your fields.
And what kind of data is this robot gathering when it's out in fields?
Our underlying philosophy is to keep the hardware as simple and as low cost as possible. So we're starting out just with visual spectrum cameras, so simple webcam type almost cameras, and then a couple of low cost LIDARs. These are spinning lasers that measure distances to objects. And so the robot travels by itself, collects these videos, and then we do the smart stuff on our computer vision and machine learning side to extract useful information out of this massive amounts of raw data that the robot collects.
So what does the robot do that's helping farmers? How does it save farmers' work?
That's an excellent question. So one of the major problems in large-scale production agriculture is knowing what's going on when and where. And right now, you know, we just don't have enough people to go out and walk the fields and figure out what's going on these fields. So over time, what we want to solve for farmers is have a small team of these robots that will continuously monitor their fields and let them know where in their field specifically which type of weed is growing or where there is a threat of some disease taking hold. And that kind of information is extremely valuable to farmers in making the right decisions to apply the chemicals or take other management actions that improve their profitability.
And Chinmay, how many employees do you have? What can you tell us a little bit about your company? What phase you're at? Is this a robot that you're ready to sell to farmers?
Yeah, so farmers maybe in a couple of years, but we've had a lot of success getting this robot out to a little bit upstream in the agricultural value chain. So seed companies, when they're developing the next generation of more productive, more sustainable seed for farmers, they need to do a lot of field evaluation of the varieties that they're considering, and they're really excited. So we had 26 robots out this year with major global seed companies, leading agricultural research institutions, and also a couple of growers who do their own sort of R&D work. Mm. We got excellent feedback, and we're raring to go for the 2019 sort of extended rollout.
And how much would these robots cost?
That's the million-dollar question, right? No. So long-term...
Not $1 million, right?
definitely not $1 million. This year we had, as a part of our beta program, the robots available for $5,000. As we scale up, we want to make these robots available for even lower than that. But we'll see how it works out in the near term.
Laura's with us, Laura Frerichs. And Laura, when we're hearing Chinmay talk about EarthSense, how representative is that of the startups that are here at Enterprise Works?
AgTech is our booming hotspot here in the Research Park. It's that intersection of engineering and technology, as well as agronomy, crop sciences. As a land-grant institution, this is a real natural intersection, but as the state of Illinois, one of the leading states in agriculture and large crop industries, this is a great place to experiment and try new things. And so that's why we're seeing big companies like John Deere, AGCO, Syngenta, Monsanto, Dow AgroSciences have operations here where they can try out new technologies. And it's why we have a booming ag tech startup scene here in Champaign that really is many of the companies that we want to see more of, like EarthSense, with robotics, aerial imagery, data sciences that are transforming precision agriculture.
And so how do you all make sure that all of the investment and energy in a place like this really benefits all of the people who are living here in Champaign County, whether we're talking about recent U of I grads maybe starting a company, or how are you paying attention to that?
We definitely include the undergrad students with work opportunities that will pay more than other on-campus work employment opportunities. The average wage here for students is $18 an hour. Many of the companies offer employment opportunities, as I'd mentioned, and the whole range of different tech skills that are being applied. Some of our fastest growing fields are in user interface and user experience, which include more of a design aesthetic that's going to go into it, as well as the human factors and psychology behind different products. So it's a variety of different skills. We just spent the morning at Parkland College talking about associate's degrees and the way that we're educating growers and producers in the future. So I think it's going to be a whole range from the associate degree through PhDs, and the workforce that's going to intersect with these technologies include the farms that are out in our rural communities, as well as the scientists here that are beginning companies.
Chinmay, as we're listening to Laura talk about all of this, I think people are always curious, how did you start this company? Where did you get the idea to do this?
That's a fantastic question. As I said, from talking to people and finding out what the real challenges are. So my co-founder and I are both university scientists, you know, faculty, and our biggest question was, you know, what can we do that's not only scientifically sort of cutting edge, but also useful to society at large? And agriculture was our focus area, of course. You know, my background is in agricultural science and sustainability, and my co-founder is a roboticist. But the answer to what we should be working on is in talking to people and finding out what problems they're actually facing. So that was the technology that we're developing is a natural consequence of what is the right solution for the most challenging problem that farmers and seed companies and scientists are facing.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with different startups here live from Enterprise Works at Research Park. When we come back, we're going to be talking to some student entrepreneurs as well as another robotics company. Stay tuned to this special broadcast of the 21st live from U of I's Research Park. Welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to a special live broadcast. We are at Enterprise Perks at Research Park in Champaign-Urbana. We've got a live audience here with us. Thanks, guys, for everyone who's here at the atrium. If you're in the area, you're welcome to come down. We are talking about startups. We've been talking with Chinmay Soman, who's the co-founder and CEO of EarthSense. We've been talking about his it's TerraSentia, right? Mm-hmm. That's the name of the robot.
That's correct, yes.
And the idea of this robot, how do you think this would help both? You mentioned large farmers who maybe have a hard time keeping track of all of their fields. Is this something you also think would work for smaller farmers as well?
Absolutely, yeah. So that's one of the fundamental design goals of the technology that we're developing. By making it small and lightweight and, by consequence, low cost, this is something completely different compared to sort of the conventional, large, sophisticated, heavy equipment that you see commonly around agriculture. And that the natural consequence of that is this technology is what we call scale neutral. So if you have in the developing world, in sub-Saharan Africa or India, if you have a four-acre farm, you could have one of these around to monitor the field. Because unlike, you know, what we think, labor is a problem even in the developing world. As more and more people go to urban areas to work in factories or urban construction environments, farming in developing world is also becoming labor constrained. So we have a bunch of very bright students from the university helping us out on figuring out what the ecosystem should look like for this technology to become useful not only in the U.S. or Europe or South America, where the scale of agriculture is, thousands of acres in a operation, but also in the developing world where it's, you know, 2 acres or 4 acres. So that's one of the major advantages of the approach that we've taken in developing this small robot.
And the price point is something that you think also, that becomes a really important part of this technology as well, right? Producing something that could be affordable all across the world, even for small farmers.
Yeah, absolutely. At scale, something like this would be, you know, comparable to what we can pay for drones at this point, right? So the drones are extremely cheap because they are made at, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. Mm-hmm. So at that point, the technology becomes very affordable even to small farmers around the world.
Thanks for being with us. That's Chinmay Soman. He's the co-founder and CEO of EarthSense. We've been talking about his robotic company, and we've got another startup with us as well. Michael Friedman and Dave Cohen are here. They're co-founders of Petronics. And I've had the chance to see their workspace here this morning. Michael, can you explain what your robotic technology is that you guys are selling?
So Mouser is an autonomous robot that is designed to entertain cats. So when we started, we really wanted to have a very clear value proposition where you could really offer value to somebody, where a lot of home robots people have seen in the last few years have just crashed and burned really fast because people are kind of hypothesizing why people might want robots in their home, but there's no real clear value. So for us, playing with cats, just pure entertainment, or people whose cats wake them up at five in the morning, or people who are trying to work and their cats are driving them crazy, we can provide this really clear value and also kind of get one of the first robots. The only successful robot in the home right now is the Roomba, a vacuum cleaner. And so we're looking for kind of these new angles to get into the home and how a robot might provide value to a customer.
And Dave, we've got one of your Mousers here with us. How long did it take you guys to develop this? This is like, it's like three
That's
or four inches.
Question.
Is it a painful question?
So we started in 2014. And we did an accelerator, a hardware-focused accelerator in Shenzhen to learn the manufacturing ecosystem and how to prototype quickly. And so I would say the development was kind of broken into two. One on just the mechanical and the hardware platform itself, which took by far the majority of the time to get down to the form factor we have today. And there were just a ton of design considerations all around what's important to the cat. So we had to go through size and get it down as small as possible, the ability to flip over, what the tails were going to be, you know, because the tail is the thing that the cat actually likes. So there was a lot of design there.
Yeah.
How many cats do you guys have?
I have four. Dave has two.
All of your employees have cats?
Not everyone, but just about everybody.
I met one of your employees as a ferret.
Ferret.
We talked
yeah.
about I don't know if the ferret uses the Mouser. So how does this – can you start it, Dave, while we're talking? Or are you worried it's going to make
a
loud?
No. Well, I can start it.
Okay.
I'm going to put the speaker right up to the microphone.
Okay.
So one of the really tricky things in the development process while he's starting it up, we can't make a $5,000 robot like we could for
right.
agriculture. So –
And do cats like that noise, too?
Cats, there are noises cats like, but most
that is
of the
not
noises...
One of them.
So actually with that noise, we were about to launch, and a lot of the noises we had been using were like R2-D2 noises and things that we couldn't launch and sell with. So noises are something we're continually adapting and improving and working on, but we needed some noises to launch with for the different things. So that noise you just heard was when auto mode starts. So I had a ton of noises on my computer that I had been messing around with, and I was just kind of going through them and listening. And that particular noise was the only one that when I played it, my cat came up to me to investigate. So I was like, well, I guess that's the auto noise.
The sound are really for humans. And one thing we've discovered is the personality of the robot and how the human relates to the robot. Is that just as important?
Well, because you have to sell it to humans.
You have to sell it to them, and it really makes it feel like part of their home. It makes them want to get out and use it again and again because they feel like it's more than just this technology device they're using. And we found that to be just as important as how well it works with cats.
And how much does this cost? And you were telling me this morning you just shipped out about 2,000 of your first units of these robots?
Yep, it's $149 US. So we've sold most of our first manufacturing run. and we're bringing in another 5,000 for the holiday season.
Okay. And how are you selling this? Like, have you been mostly selling online? Is that how you have been finding people who want to buy a cat robot?
Yeah, mostly on our website, and we'll be coming up on Amazon this month, so that's really exciting. In terms of finding customers, our customers are all over the world, and the easiest is social media advertising. It's really flexible platform where you can find people all over the world. If you try to market this, say, just in Illinois as a small company, there's no way you could find enough sales.
And so when you guys started this, I wonder, because you're cat owners, what did you think the problem was with the cat toy industry, which I imagine is a pretty big industry, right, Dave?
Yeah, so it is a giant industry, and actually the thing, so Michael pointed out the pain points for the customer, which is you're trying to work and your cat's bothering you. You're trying to sleep and your cat's bothering you. And automated cat entertainment isn't something that's new or unique to us, but these things are out there. They're usually sub $20. They've got a stick and a string, and they move around in circles. And what you'll see is that cats get bored of those very quickly. And what we kind of noticed was the cats get bored of these automated toys that exist really fast, but they will never get bored of a mouse. And the key difference is that the mouse can sense and react to a cat.
A real mouse,
yeah.
Okay.
So sensing and reacting was a really critical piece to keeping a cat's attention over a period of time and continually over multiple days.
And then, so we were talking about this before we went on air, Michael, the whole idea of cats chasing things. You had to learn a lot about that, right, in terms of what a cat will chase?
Yeah, so before we started the company, I actually spent a lot of my time just entertaining people's cats for fun. And that's actually when Dave first talked about doing the project, how we got started. And cats hiding and playing intricate games is how they play. On these products, they'll say random movement as a selling point, but cats don't like random movement. They actually want to stalk something. So our long-term goal is to be able to imitate a real mouse and hide in places and have cats come investigate.
And do you need a remote control for this, or how does it work?
You can remote control from your phone if you want to, but it can also be completely autonomous. There is a sensor. Everything is cutting edge off cell phones.
And it looks like, is there a little solar panel at the top?
This is a proximity sensor.
Oh, that's a proximity sensor.
Yep.
So is it battery operated?
Yes, a lithium polymer battery, rechargeable.
It's rechargeable,
maybe
okay.
40, 45 minutes per charge, and charges in about 30 minutes.
And so it'll play for 45 minutes?
It'll play continuously for 45 minutes, but cats usually play in bursts. So you can actually stretch that playtime over a lot of the day.
Wow. So what have you guys learned about cats while doing this?
So we've learned a lot of things about kind of cat breeds and how different cat breeds play and seeing correlations among cat breeds. There's different kinds of cat breeds throughout the world who play in different ways. I think we've uncovered a lot of little nuggets about cats and cat play that no one's ever really had the broad customer base or the broad user base. We've got thousands of users compared to a cat study that might use 20 cats.
Wow.
So a lot of little nuggets.
Yeah. And so you said you're going to be on Amazon soon is your goal?
In October.
So you'll be on Amazon in October. Where do you make the Mouser robots?
We actually work out of the iRobot factory, so where the Roomba is made.
Oh, wow.
So when we started, we really wanted to find a place that understood robots and also understood toys. They also do Mattel and Hasbro. So cats put it in their mouth. You want it to be chemically safe and all these things, but most toy factories couldn't build a robot. They don't have the expertise. So it's really been ideal for us.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. That's Michael Friedman.
Thank
I want
you.
To thank Dave Cohen as well, both of them co-founders of Petronix, a cat toy robot. If you're just joining us, we're live from Enterprise Works at Research Park on the U of I campus, and we've been talking to entrepreneurs who've started businesses here. Many of those founders are recent grads, but some of them are actually still in school. The university's iVenture program is an accelerator for students who want to run their own startups, and two of those student entrepreneurs are with us now. Teresa Yang is the co-founder of Phantom Core. She's a senior majoring in bioengineering. Kendall Furby is a co-founder of Cut to the Chase. She's also a senior majoring in material sciences. Teresa, Kendall, welcome to the 21st, guys. Thanks for being here with me.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Teresa, can you start by telling us a little bit about what Phantom Core is? I understand it's like a medical device of the human heart.
Sure, yeah. At FenderCore, we're developing a physical heart simulator. So it's like a ghost for the organ in that you can touch it and feel it and actually see it beating. And it can be used for things like surgical pre-op where it would represent the heart and you don't have to use the actual tissue instead.
Okay, and so why was it important to get a device that's really close to simulating what a heart does?
So it can be used for preparation for operations or for, say, clinical trials where they need to have something that's standardized but still close enough to the actual heart. And for other purposes like that. Also, medical students can use it to practice when they don't necessarily have access to something like cadavers or other practicing methods.
And what's it made out of, Teresa?
It's made out of silicone. So it's this type of rubbery material. It has a give that's kind of like tissue.
And how did you first get interested in building medical devices?
So I heard about the Phantom Core. It wasn't actually called that at the time, but it used to be a senior design project that was rejected due to its complexity and the time necessary. And I heard about it through the Biomedical Engineering Society here and thought it was interesting in that it's a way to create something that could potentially help people in the industry.
That's Teresa Yang. As we're talking about technology that helps people, Kendall, your company is called Cut to the Chase. I understand it's related to a topic that's on a lot of people's minds right now, and that's the issue of sexual assault. Can you tell us about what you've created?
Yeah, so we've created an online platform that aims to empower victims of sexual assault and bring perpetrators of these crimes to justice. So essentially, we've created a web platform where victims of these crimes can document the experience and just anonymously record what happened to them and then have the potential to be matched with others who have reported the same perpetrator.
And why do you think this will make it easier for survivors of sexual assault?
Yeah, so as we've seen with the Me Too movement, victims of these crimes are more likely to come forward if they know someone else has experienced the same thing from the same person. And we've also seen that they're more likely to be believed when they come forward in numbers rather than alone.
Mm-hmm. And so your company, Cut to the Case, when you set out to create this, what did you think was missing from this process of reporting sexual assaults? Because this is a big problem, and we hear a lot about how it is hard, obviously. It's very understandable why it would be hard for someone to come forward and report something like this.
The current process is very traumatizing. One part of that is that victims often have to sit and talk to a stranger, so we think that by being able to document this from behind the safety of their computer screen, that it'll make the reporting process easier for them going forward.
And how does iVenture come into all of this? Did they help provide financial resources for you to help build this platform?
Yes, so we worked in iVenture last summer.
Okay, and Teresa, what about you? How has iVenture helped you?
We've also had funds, but we worked in iVenture this past summer.
Do you find that when you're a student and you want to start a company, that seems very daunting to me. Do you feel like this is a good environment for you to do something like this, Teresa?
I would say definitely, in that we're working with a cohort of other startups as well, so the environment is very friendly and supportive in that you can ask other people for questions or clarification about things that they've experienced so you can progress your own startup as well.
Mm-hmm. And Kendall, what about you? Do you feel like this, when you had this idea for your platform, do you feel like this is something that in the U of I community, when you were talking about creating this, you found a lot of support to do something like this?
Yeah, and I feel like I found a lot of support, too, especially as a female co-founder.
If you guys would let people know a little bit more about your companies, what would you want them to know? Teresa?
We're multidisciplinary, and we get along really well in that our culture is friendly, and we joke around a lot, and we have fun during our meetings as well as getting business done.
So you're a senior. Is this going to be your full-time job when you graduate?
There's a good chance of that.
Okay. Kendall, what about you?
I'd want them to know that a lot of technologies can be used for social good and social impact.
Yeah. And what are your plans for after graduation?
Hopefully I'll get to work on this.
You'll get to work on it more. Well, thank you both for being with me. Kendall Furby is founder of Cut to the Case. She's a senior at U of I, majoring in material sciences and engineering. Teresa Yang is also a senior. Her major is bioengineering, and she's one of the founders of Phantom Core. When we come back, we are going to continue our show live from Enterprise Works at Research Park, and we're going to take a little shift. We're going to talk a little bit about transportation, a new bike share program that has come on campus, and those bikes are around town. Stay tuned. You're listening to our very special broadcast live from Research Park. Listening to a live special broadcast of the 21st. We are at Enterprise Works. That's a business incubator on the U of I campus in their research park. We have been talking about the startup community all this hour, and we wanted to end on something that's always very important when it comes to talking about startup culture and attracting businesses, and that's transportation, specifically when it comes to biking and public transit. If you've been on the U of I campus this fall, maybe you've noticed a new set of teal bikes around town. It's a new bike share program. We're also going to be asking what a robust public transit system looks like and if Champaign-Urbana has it. Joining me now to discuss this are Lily Wilcox, who's the visiting active transportation coordinator at the University of Illinois. Jane Sullivan is with Champaign-Urbana's Mass Transit District. And Leo Kovis is chairman of Champaign County Bikes. He's also a member of the Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Commission. Guys, thanks for being here with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lily, I wanted to start with you, and if you can explain a little bit about this new bike share program. Who's running this? And I think people maybe have seen, and if you visited Champaign-Urbana or if you were particularly on campus, you've seen these bikes and popping up all over.
Absolutely. So you can see them in all over Champaign-Urbana and the campus. You'll see them in your residential community as well as see them around a lot of campus buildings and facilities, around shops and businesses. So the program is from operating out of a private company that has applied to the city of Champaign, the city of Urbana, and the university, agreed to meet a lot of our terms and conditions. We do not actually pay them at the university or the cities to operate. They actually give us a quick administrative fee for just filing the application, and then they have to agree to kind of operate and encourage their customers to be parking responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
The company is, in turn, operating a bike share in the community for a very low cost. So it's 50 cents for 15 minutes. And depending whether you're part of the university community or whether you're part of the CU community, you have a really low rate on getting unlimited ride passes.
Oh, okay. Leo, as someone who's mm-hmm. chairman of Champaign County Bikes, how excited are you that there is this program now in town?
Oh, we think it's great. I mean, anything that gets more people riding bikes around to more places is just fantastic. And that's really one of the selling points for this, was that it's not the typical bike share that people have heard of where you have to park it at a certain docking station, but you can take these really wherever you need to take them. Just the other day, I saw a couple parked at a bus stop, which was just sort of on the street, but some people had ridden the bikes from their home to the bus stop, which, you know, maybe a mile, maybe too far to walk to that bus stop. But with the bike share, it makes sense for people to put these rides together and be more active in their transportation choices.
Right, and Lily, I wonder how it works here for returning them. The way it was set up in Chicago was for that last mile, mm-hmm. right? So that was the, when Chicago, that's how they identified, they were like, that last mile between public transit and work is the really hard thing for people, so we're going to set up these bike share locations around those areas. How does it work here in Champaign-Urbana?
So we've got a really unique transportation environment, so we're a little bit different than Chicago, and for us, we have a lot of people on campus are dealing with a 10-minute passing period in between classes, but they maybe are a 15-minute walk between those two classes. We do have a last quarter mile situation for people who are taking transit, and so it might be a little bit easier for you to use that bicycle if it's at your bus stop. So next people who get dropped off at that bus stop, they actually have two bicycles there, access that they can actually ride really close to their apartment or house.
And then where do you return the bike?
So you return the bikes wherever you can leave them near sidewalks, on sidewalks as long as they're not blocking the way, and also in public right-of-ways in the cities. But on campus, we do encourage you to leave, just like all bicycles, you're required to leave a bicycle in a bike parking area. Now, we're not saying you have to leave it at a bike rack. We can sit just next to a bike rack area would be very, very awesome. We do see sometimes bicycles are getting left outside of those areas, but they're generally being left in areas where students are already kind of parking bicycles anyways, just not at a bike parking
area. So you're not locking them?
You do lock them. There's a lock at the back on the back wheel. So you press a button on the bicycle, and it puts a piece of steel in between the spokes on the back wheel.
Okay. And then I guess are we going to start seeing vans around town that are picking up bikes and moving them?
Yes, absolutely. So there are three or four right now currently with the one company that has been approved, VeoRide, of people who are a little mix of part-time, a little mix of full-time, responding to bicycles needing to be moved around. The company knows which bikes haven't been used for 2 to 3 days. So say if you move your bicycle to the other side of Champaign-Urbana, maybe a really quiet residential area, you park it outside the house, and for the rest of your work week, you end up taking the bus to work. That's completely fine. The company will be notified in a couple of days that this bike hasn't moved, and they'll pick it up and move it to an area for its easier access.
And Lily, how did you guys come up with this model? Because this does sound really unusual for you. It sounds very convenient that you can just leave the bike wherever you want when you're finished with it.
Yeah, so the first time I heard about it was South by Southwest did it in Austin, Texas, and it was interesting. It went off really well. And it's kind of like what we're seeing with dockless electric scooters. It was kind of popular. People really wanted to use bicycles. And in this community, we've always had a strong interest in getting a bike share program here, but it was really cost prohibitive. So we're facing, large portions of upwards of $1 million just for a handful of bikes. And they were going to be expensive to the users, which we like to try to keep our transportation options very affordable in Champaign-Urbana. Make sure that they're well utilized and they're actually helping people. So we were in a difficult position previously with bike share because of those traditional bike share setups.
Right, you're kind of stuck to a dock, and then you're
stuck to a dock.
Right, like you see that in Chicago. The docks are expensive. There's been challenges with getting the bikes in the right place.
And medium-sized communities like ourselves were trying to get that money and still doing those, but you see that they weren't being very well utilized in those medium-sized cities because they were just so hard to get in between the different docks and also where to find the bikes. They were hard for an everyday person. So these bikes, there are a lot more of them than we probably would have ever been able to see with a docked bike share program. And so they're easier to find. And we're able to offer them for basically the cost of, parking maintenance issues that we usually deal with regular bicycles.
Mm-hmm. And this is a model you think that maybe other medium-sized communities throughout Illinois and the U.S. can be using?
They have already been doing that. So this company has been operating in various Midwestern communities, and they've been doing really well. Some other companies that also do this, like Lime, it used to be called Lime Bikes. It was a bike share company that was dockless. They've been operating in South Bend, Indiana for over a year now, and so that's kind of an interesting community because it's a medium-sized Midwestern community, has winter like we do, and it also has a university, has Notre Dame in town. So we were kind of looking at some of these other areas in the Midwest and seeing how they were working out. In general, the demand was there, and they were being used very well. After the first month in South Bend, we saw double the amount of rides, and we saw triple the amount of users taking the rides. So we were really excited to offer this for people in Champaign-Urbana when we have, again, like I said, a very unique situation where many people who live in our community don't have an opportunity to store a bicycle, so they don't have a place in their apartment, or landlords don't particularly like it. University housing students can't bring bicycles into their residence hall, so their room. And so we're in a situation where it's kind of hard to have your own bicycle. So many people want to ride a bicycle. They're in college. They're interested in it. And so now we're actually able to provide that. The company came in and provided that.
How many people have used it so far? Do you have a sense of how many people have used it? It's been a month, right?
Less than a month. Okay. We will be getting the basic numbers from the company soon. I can tell you, though, that we've been getting about an average of 2,000 rides per day. mm-hmm. which is pretty substantial since not all 500 bikes have been launched.
Wow. And Jane, how does that compare to how many people are using public transportation across Champaign-Urbana?
Sure. MTD provides about 11 million rides a year, which is pretty high for a fleet of only 111 buses in a community of our size. So we have very high student ridership. We've got a lot of students taking the bus to class, to work, home. And we are really excited about the bike share programs here in town. MTD supports all things active transportation, all things mobility. So we think it's great, and we're happy to see more people out on bikes and safely and provides great accessibility for our community.
Do you need to wear a helmet when you're riding the bikes?
You always really should. Your brain,
but the helmets
is, your
don't
skull
come
is like
with,
so,
right. The helmet's
so strong and durable, right. But concrete is so much stronger. You really should. One quick thing to add to that, MTD, previously when the community was looking into paying for it out of our own pockets to provide this service, MTD has always been at the forefront of saying, hey, we will put our money where our mouth is. We would love to help. And they were always spearheading a lot of these different situations. Again, like I said, it was never came, docked bike share never came to fruition just because of the extraordinary cost. Mm-hmm.
So Leo Kobus is also with us, chairman of Champaign County Bikes. Mm-hmm. Leo, how would you describe what cycling looks like? We've been talking about this bike sharing program, but what mm-hmm. about the rest of the cycling ecosystem across the Champaign and Urbana?
Oh, it's pretty cool here, actually. And lately, we've gotten a lot of really nice infrastructure, particularly the Kickapoo Rail Trail, which is 7 miles from Urbana to St. Joseph. You can be out there any time of year riding without needing to combat with cars or traffic. You can, of course, go jogging or, you know, push a stroller there. But we've been seeing hundreds of people per day going out onto the Kickapoo Rail Trail since it was opened. The cities of Urbana and Champaign also have extensive bike lanes throughout the cities. Many of them are protected or off the street. So it's pretty good. In Urbana, the rate of bicycle commuting in the city is about 6.7%. In Champaign, it's a little bit lower. And both of those are way higher than average for the United States.
Mm. And so I have a big question for you guys. Would you say that you think Champaign and Urbana are mainly still car towns? Or how would you rate Champaign and Urbana when it comes to people using their car versus, oh, Lily, you're laughing. So I feel like you've already going to give us a bad grade for how many people are using their cars. No?
Well, so I'm in a unique position because I work at the university. I see people from all over the world. And when the students from Amsterdam come to the United States, they immediately find me somehow, and they complain a bit, irate at how they thought American college campuses were all about bikes, and they don't see them anywhere. But I think...
Yeah, that's perhaps an unfair comparison to the city of Amsterdam. But.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not the Netherlands yet, everybody. But I will, and I'd love to hear everybody else's opinion, but I think that this is a really interesting place in that in the middle of the Midwest, we have a really walk-bike-friendly culture, and we have a lot of people who move to this community, and they keep pushing that, and they keep voting by buying houses in the community that are walk- and bike-friendly, and they mm-hmm. you can see the downtowns are flourishing. So you're seeing more and more movement towards mm-hmm. that, but we have a lot of work to do as far as making the streets feel safe for everybody.
Jane?
I'll just add that the university and MTD and the cities have made great efforts on improvements lately, especially you can see it with the MCOR project.
So it's free if you're a U of I student and staff, and it's $1 for everyone else?
Yes, for MTD services,
okay.
Correct. But in terms of making the streets more accessible, safer, maybe more appealing to bicyclists and pedestrians, we're really making great strides. You can see it right on Green Street with the MCOR project, and that's a really great partnership between the cities and the university and MTD. So we are moving in a good direction, I think.
Chris, we'll let you have the last word.
So I just want to say that Urbana was the first city in Illinois that was voted to be a gold-level bicycle-friendly city. And by the League of American Bicyclists, and Champaign, I believe, is silver, which are both just amazing achievements on their own, and that just shows the dedication that these cities have to making transportation of all sorts available to everybody.
Leo, sorry. Thank That's you, funny. Leo. That's Leo Kovas, who's chairman of Champaign County Bikes. I want to thank Lily Wilcock for being with us as well, with the University of Illinois, and Jane Sullivan with MTD, the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District. Guys, thanks so much for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that wraps up. That's actually, we're out of time already for our show for today. We've been live at Research Park at Enterprise Works in Champaign-Urbana on the U of I campus. Thanks for being here, guys, all the people who have come out. We are continuing to have live shows. If you're around town, actually, this afternoon at 5 o'clock, we'll be at the Champaign Farmers Market on Thursday at 11 a.m. We'll be part of Pygmalion Festival and doing a special broadcast from the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. All of these shows require so much work, so I want to thank all of the folks who did all of the hard work to make this broadcast possible today. Our producers, Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio. Special thanks to our engineer Jason Croft for all of his technical direction and support during today's live remote broadcast. We'd also like to thank the folks at U of I's Research Park, especially Laurel Blau Weisskopf and Jim Wells. Thanks for being, for having us here. Vishesh Anand is our intern. Technical direction and help also comes from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Our website, 21stshow.org, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that, especially here, is a great place to find out about apps to download the show, to find our social media handles, our Twitter handles, 21stshow. If you want to leave us a voicemail, send us an email. If you want to figure out how to follow us on social media or configure your smart speaker, all you have to remember is our website, 21stshow.org. We are a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.